honorable members, CFO and the rest of the staff of EDD. I think we will start, and as the minister, when the minister or the acting DG walks in, I hope that the acting DG is not later than 11 o'clock. And I was telling him it must be here 11 o'clock. If he's not here 11 o'clock, then he must stay where he is. But I've got the message that both of them will be here. But be that as it may, the minister, as I've explained, has personally called me to, because they've got, you know, people has been called to higher places. And apparently he's part of the cabinet task team that arranges the funerals and that. So they had a meeting this morning with, I think, the late Minister Roy Padeachi and those people that has passed away in active duty service. So, so that's not a problem. With the minister, we have accepted that. while we await the acting DG or the minister, whoever makes their arrival first, I think we can just do some house things first. our oversight week that was planned for the 15th or the 11th, when was it, right? The June. 11th or the 15th of June. We were planning to go to the Northern Cape. Now, according to Energy Department, there is some serious issues in two provinces. One critical province is KwaZulu-Natal, in terms of the rollout of the INF program. Eskom and Energy has spent a lot of money, or given a lot of money to the municipalities, and there's hardly no rollout of the INF, and the committee has been requested to go, and if possible we can find it, to go and do oversight over that and call Eskom, Energy, as well as the other departments all together so that we can get to the bottom of this and do that oversight. Honorable Nyambi. Honorable Nyambi. I see you're smiling. Is something you want to tell us? Always. Even alone. Oh, okay. So I know that we have said that provisionally we'll look at the Northern Cape, but in the Northern Cape there's also three municipalities that also needs the attention in terms of also the electricity rollout, energy rollout. Specifically the INF solar water gauges, as well as the infrastructure to this electricity. One is the R municipality, I don't know what the new name is of that municipality, the representative of the Northern Cape is not here. And the other one is the Greater Karoo or something, Wollaston, Loxton, Carnarvon area, and Katu Kuruman area. That's the other area that we should try and focus on. Now we're sitting with the idea of maybe splitting the committee in two, and send half of the committee to KwaZulu-Natal and half of the committee to the Northern Cape. So I'm just applying to the powers that be, to find out if we can do that. Otherwise, we won't do justice in a week to visit two provinces, if all of us go to two provinces. Madam, Honorable Verlingen.
Person. I'm quite happy if we split the committee in two. It's not an issue as long as we're sure that we comply by the rules and that, you know, we have an official mandate. And secondly, once we've made up our minds to go, we must please not change gears. I mean, this particular meeting went from here to Joburg to back again to late. So it upsets a lot of things because this is happens to be my fourth meeting this morning. So we must just try and have a set program and then abide by it.
No, that's wonderful. If you are in so much meeting so early in the morning, that means that you are earnestly and honestly earning your day salary. In that regard, if you are in such a lot of meetings, wonderful. That is, I'm very proud of you, and that is great. Apparently, members, let me also put you in the picture. The minister was supposed to leave with the president to Addis Ababa today at 1:30 or something, 2:00. The Ethiopian Airlines flight was supposed to be, but somehow or the other, then we've got the request to do the briefing in Johannesburg, because we would have briefed us as maybe 7:00 this morning till about 9:00, and then have to leave to the airport to catch a flight to Johannesburg, and then catch a flight out to Addis Ababa. But apparently that meeting in Addis Ababa, I think it's still going ahead, but the minister is not going to Addis Ababa anymore. So it wasn't proper for us then to go to Johannesburg, because we had the approval from the powers that be here in the institution to go to Johannesburg, have the meeting there, and then come back. But see that the minister was in Cape Town then, it wasn't proper for us to go to Johannesburg and see that he didn't go to Addis Ababa. it is just right that we have then our meeting here in Cape Town, where it's supposed to be in Parliament. Honourable Van Lingen, that's the one issue in terms of that. The late start, I've just explained now why we have the late start. We would have started on time, but then, as I've said, that the minister has been called to be part of the task team that arranges this inter-ministerial task team that arranges this funeral. And apparently the DG is on his way, and according to my watch, he's got about how many minutes? 3 minutes left. Do you think you'll make it in 3 minutes? You're very confident. Is he using a helicopter? Okay. What have we got on that day? The other thing is, honourable members, we have received an invitation by the Portfolio Committee on Economic Development, inviting us. They've got a briefing by the Economic Development Department and Department of Public Enterprises, as well as Transnet, on the infrastructure program, 29th of May, 9:30 to 1:00. Now, as we know, the infrastructure task team has met with, or the president has set up the infrastructure task team. They had their first meeting, not take your seat in front. They had their meeting now last week, I think they had the first meeting, with terms of references and that, so I'm not sure what other plans have they got. But on the same time, we've also arranged with the IDC, Industrial Development Corporation, and the Kula Enterprises for their strat plan and their operational plan for 2012, which I think is very important, as IDC is the parent of the CIFA, which has just been launched, and and it's very important for us to also engage the IDC on a number of things and issues. So I would really suggest that we give to one invitation a skip, so that we focus then on the IDC, and because it is a key role player, and we want to know what the IDC's footprint are and their growth are in the provinces. We need to engage the IDC in terms of that. So, Secretary, if you can just acknowledge the receipt, but and we won't be able to attend. Well, getting back to our business of the day, as the Honourable Van Lingen has been sweating, the fourth meeting for the morning, and we don't want to tire her out before 12 o'clock, as she has to go to another meeting, seventh meeting or something. So, DG, Mr. Sally Mauser, welcome to you and your staff. Now, there's quite a lot of new faces that we've seen in EDD. The department has undergone a total whole new revamp, I see. I won't say the old faces were not that smiling and good, but you guys are smiling more than me. Now, if the CFO can smile of a department, then we know that the department is rocking, as they say, super cool, something to that effect. And the DG smiles, then we know it's good. Now, DG, we want to welcome you and your staff to the select committee. If that caucus can finish. Oh, but you are disturbing me. I can hear your voice, and it's disturbing me. So we want to welcome all members also to this meeting, where we'll have the briefing by the economic development on the strategic plan and the budgets. In actual fact, if we can do it those way, just to go through the budget, for the budget vote, because we will have a strategic planning meeting as a committee very shortly. In due course with the department and with the entities. But if you want to touch on the strat plan, it's also fine, DG. We're just thinking our time will allow us, and that. But I think let's just call for a minute of introduction, not a minute of silence, just a minute of introduction, and so that we know who's who. In the room. My name is Freddie Adams. I'm permanent delegate from the Western Cape and chairperson of the Committee of Economic Development, Select Committee, which comprises economic development, mineral resources, and energy. That's the three departments and the three ministries this committee has got the oversight over. Madam.
Good morning, I'm not Stuart Nicolo, the committee secretary.
Madam Abrams, the elephant.
Good morning, my name is Dave Abrams. I'm from Gauteng, thank you.
Good morning, I'm Elsa Van Lingen from the Eastern Cape.
Araluja, Matsabadikhali, Limpopo province.
You are looking so elegant in your red, Matikhali. You are really brightening up the room. Thank you.
Morning, Chomonyam, Mpumalanga province.
Good morning, Abdullah Hanif, the committee researcher.
I have no mic, but Johan Lorenzen from the parliamentary monitoring group.
The lady.
Good morning,
Majority.
I'm committee assistant from committee section.
Good morning, Edwin Conroy, ANC research unit.
Good morning, I'm Tumsan Kamlete from Rasulu Natal.
Good morning, Bafuna Nimguni, Free State.
Development. I'm Mohamed Wada from Economic Development.
Sorry, Ahmad. Mic is on. Okay. Ahmad Mohamed Wada. Oh, Mohamed Wada, okay.
Ntato Minyuku Koboro, Economic Development.
Dagozo Vilagasi, Economic Development.
Economic Development.
Mr. Emirations from Committee Sections.
Good two gentlemen in front.
Salim Maus is the acting VP for economic development.
Good morning, Honorable Chair. Ibrahim Patel, Economic Development.
Thank you very much, Minister. Welcome to you, and thank you for making the time of being to briefing the committee personally. We really appreciate that, and we know that some member was saying to us now, one of our members was saying to us it's their fourth meeting, but I know you had your fifth meeting also this morning, so you are one step ahead of us. And very long meetings, but we have accepted the explanation given to us. Minister, we, as I was just saying to the DG, we will carry on and see how far time allow us, because I know also 1 o'clock you have to leave, as you've got other engagements as well. The budget is very important for us. If you can take us through there, the strat plan, you can touch on it, because we will have a strategic planning session, where we will look at the holistic strat plan. I'm not sure whether time will allow us now to look at holistically the strat plan and the budget, but it's up to you. You can call the shots there. And also let me give it over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to the members of the committee. I suspect it would be. Chairperson, as I said, good morning to everybody. I suspect that if we call a vote today, then the departments would be well represented in that vote. But it is a pleasure to be with the Select Committee. You do an absolutely vital role in oversight of the department and of our work. You bring an important additional dimension to our work, which is to constantly remind us of the importance of thinking through the provincial implications of our work. And what I'd like to do, Chairperson, is really run through a presentation that seeks to integrate the strategic plan and budget. I will take your advice that I may need to be a little bit brisk in dealing with some of the strategic plan aspects. But nonetheless, what we would like to convey to the committee is some sense of what we're about, what we seek to do, and how we want to deploy the resources that's voted on by Parliament to help achieve those objectives. And I'll start, therefore, Chairperson, fairly immediately with the presentation. And by way of an outline, the strategic planning framework involves a multi-year plan with an annual performance component to it. So it's really part of government trying to move beyond a very short-term, narrow, limited horizon. And this, in fact, is interesting because it's the first year that we're doing the APPs, the annual performance plans. And the idea behind this is that the strategic plan should not change dramatically unless circumstances have changed quite significantly, that they would be complemented by these annual updates. We'll do the budget for 2012-13, 2014-15 for the MTF period, and just make a few concluding remarks. Of course, as is traditional, we start with the vision of the department: decent work through meaningful economic transformation and inclusive growth. the mission of what we aim to do, coordinate the contributions within the state, but between the state and private and civil society players, help with alignment. One of our big challenges is just making sure that the many excellent ideas that is available in the state is connected to each other, and promote government's role and goal in advancing economic development with decent work opportunities. We briefly highlight for the committee's consideration the constitutional values that the department is obliged to uphold. The constitution is the bedrock of governance. The promotion of a number of values consistent with the constitution. We take the committee briefly through the legislative mandate, that the acts of parliament that we in particular administer, the Industrial Development Corporation Act, the Competition Act, and the International Trade Administration Act. We recall very briefly the political and policy mandate, and it's derived from the manifesto that the ruling party had put to the nation in 2009, and it includes, among others, a range of areas that were highlighted in the annual report of the department and in the printed strategic plan. Taking your advice, Chair, that I would seek to just highlight a few areas, I would say, in addition to that broad mandate, there are also specific policy mandates, concrete things that flow from either a decision by cabinet or a public policy that emanates in one or other way from legislation that previously came through Parliament. What are some of the ones that I would highlight? The first is the framework for South Africa's response to the international economic crisis. This administration took office just as the global economy had begun its meltdown, and in fact, within weeks of South Africa officially going into a recession. The New Growth Path Framework, which was one of the first significant long-term policy documents to emanate from the administration, and of course a range of social accords, agreements, commitments, joint commitments between the business community, organized labor, government, and other members of civil society. The political mandate is set out in the printed document. You will recall it. Sustainable livelihoods, decent work opportunities, integrated macroeconomic policy, state-led industrial policy, sector programs, measures to promote beneficiation, green jobs, expanded public works linked to infrastructure and meeting social needs, reorienting the mandates of development finance institutions, public investment program for growth and employment, quality of employment issues, procurement, broad-based black economic empowerment, national youth service program, and the important role of mining and agriculture in employment, in meeting basic needs, and community development. So those were all contextual issues. Now, when the department was set up, that was the context within which it was set up. Some of it, like the New Growth Path and the Accords, flowed from its work program. I thought it would be useful briefly to summarize the evolution of the department over the almost 3 years of its existence. It's the newest department in government in the sense that it's not simply a splinter of an existing department, but an attempt to create a coherent ministry and department that does something different to what has been simply the work of other departments. And so I highlight here a number of phases that seek to identify what the roadmap has been for the department to get where it is now. Phase one was obviously the establishment of a ministry for policy integration, which was one of the matters that flowed from the appointment of a new cabinet 2 days after the president had been sworn in. And that started in May 2009. Immediately after the appointment of a new cabinet, this ministry's first public responsibility was to coordinate responses to the recession and the global economic crisis. So even before we had a department, we had to climb in and just begin to get some consensus going within the state and between the state and civil society, the business organizations and labor, on how best we get out of a recession driven by global economic conditions. Phase three was the establishment of a department. The legal work started in 2009. The department proper began to take shape from about February, March 2010. And that is, of course, ongoing work. It's gone, developed quite far, and certainly in 2012, further progress is taking place. Phase four was the transfer of six public entities to the Economic Development Department. Three of them were development finance institutions, and three are economic regulatory bodies. That took place in April through to June 2010. Phase five was the completion of the work on a new growth path. We started that late in 2009. We completed the conceptual work by the end of 2010. Phase six was, okay, we've got the document now. How do we begin to actually make it work? How do we align the work of departments to the NGP? And one of the first ways in which it was done is the president developed a set of outcomes for all the economic linked ministers, which were set out in outcome four on jobs and growth. And of course, shortly thereafter, we launched the work that has subsequently led to the infrastructure jobs driver. Phase seven was, okay, good, we've got the alignment now in the state, but the state is only a contributor to jobs. We've got to unlock the potential of the private sector. We've got to foster partnerships with the trade union movement and employers on shop floor level. So phase seven was really a dialogue to develop a series of key accords. Phase eight was to strengthen implementation of the NGP beyond the fact that we had started to allocate budget and identified goals. And perhaps the most significant one was we developed an infrastructure plan. The infrastructure driver is the first of the jobs drivers in the new growth path. Because on infrastructure rests essentially the performance of the economy as a whole. So there, Chairperson, Honourable Members, is a quick schematic of the evolution of the department. The main focus of the department, committee members will be familiar with the concept, and I wanted to just give it some idea. One of our jobs is integration. So, example, we make an announcement on a million solo water heaters. And from there, we need now to make sure that we have the solar water heaters not only as a product on your top of your roof generating hot water, but that it enhances the economic development impact. So this department saw one of its roles to ensure localization of the solar water heaters, make sure that they get manufactured in South Africa. And that means working with investors, with the SABS on the standard side, with Eskom and others on the procurement side, to foster a domestic manufacturing capability in solar water heaters. And we did quite well there, and some of those we may highlight in the session at the Select Committee, and it certainly was highlighted in the National Assembly. Take a second example, jobs and mining. South Africa has developed a reputation for underperforming in the extraction of minerals. Our reserves as a percentage of global share are higher than our production as a percentage of global share. In other words, others with more or with less minerals are mining it more actively. So we've got to fix that. But in addition to that, what we do with those minerals are critical. If we simply dig them from the ground, put them into a ship, send them elsewhere, the capacity to create jobs and add economic value domestically is foregone. And it's in that area that the department has done its work. So it's worked very closely with the sister department in mineral resources to develop a beneficiation strategy that can take a few key minerals and say, how do we move from digging to you seeing it as a input in the manufacturing area? So if you ask us, what is an example of integration? How does the department do integration? I would offer those examples, and there are plenty of them, but those are two fairly representative examples of its integration work. I could use the Development Finance Institution as a third one. I could use competition policy using, say, the Walmart or the Kansai or the Pioneer Matter as all examples of integration, where we take something that will happen and we extract a lot more development outcome from it, or we take something that ought to happen but it's not happening for whatever reason and we help to move it along. So integration is ensuring that the state extracts enormous value from all of the public policy interventions in the economy. Let me take the example of coordination, and honorable members will see that I'm not going through all of the examples, but I would be happy in the Q&A to take some of these in and provide a bit of detail. On coordination, one example is that the department, together with the DTI and National Treasury, deal with Outcome 4, which deals with decent employment through inclusive growth. So our job is to keep our eye on the employment ball as regularly as we can. Second example is linking small business funding agencies, and I'm delighted, Chairperson, to acknowledge that you were present at the launch of CIFA, and it's an example of the kind of work that we do. A third example is the infrastructure plan of the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission, whose secretariat and implementation arm is located inside the department. And finally, we do implementation of the strategic plan itself. On the policy mandate, taking the framework on the international economic crisis as an example, I've highlighted here a few key areas on public investment, macroeconomic policies, industrial and trade policies, and public employment, as well as social protection. On the new growth path, I identify briefly the 5 million new jobs target and key organizing principles that the new growth path sets out: labor absorption, lower carbon emissions, and improving coherence and linkages between public and private sectors. And finally, social partners. A number of areas have been identified, and committee members would be familiar with these. Social accords have come out of the first phase of the new growth path work. We signed a basic education accord in mid-July, a national skills accord in mid-July, a local procurement accord at the end of October last year, and a green economy accord towards the end of November. On integrated factors, the Ministry and Department achieve its objectives through focusing on existing public entities and processes. Our approach is not to try to build a massive new bureaucracy. So you'll see it's a fairly small and focused department by choice. It uses existing agencies rather than creating new ones. In fact, part of its rationale is to consolidate existing ones and just get more value out of them rather than expand the size of the bureaucracy and confuse size with effectiveness. point out here to a few bullet points. Development Finance Institute oversight, DIDC and CIFA, the Economic Regulatory Body, the oversight, the Competition Authorities and ITAC, of course the work in the infrastructure clusters with the DTI and IPAC, the inter-ministerial committees, a number of them, they're really quite an interesting creature because they bring together ministers in a common area. Let me take an example here, climate change. It was an excellent example last year. You had a team of ministers working collaboratively to ensure that COP17 is a success. At the technical level on what should go into the outcomes, at the public level in trying to say how can we ensure that the look and feel of our green economy is known to South Africans in the lobbying, in extracting value for local jobs and so on. Integrated practice in the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission and in presidency-led councils. Now, we're very active in all of these examples that I've put on the screen. Finally, and importantly for this committee, of course, is MINMEC, which is a structure that brings together the MECs for economic development at provincial level with the ministers of economic development and of trade and industry. Outside of government, the integrated practice relates to social dialogue. On the performance environment, very briefly, government's focus is on the target of 5 million jobs by 2020, and we work inside of government to achieve a range of objectives. I set that out in slide 15, and I point also to the PICC's role. The organizational environment, last year an unqualified audit. We're going through the current audit process shortly. We had an increase in the expenditure for this financial year, significant rise, about a doubling compared to the previous year. And that is as the department grows, its capacity to spend is increasing because the key driver for spending in a department like this is its employment. Not just the salary bill, but the activities that is promoted by skilled professional staff that is brought into the department. We've got funds for 142 posts in 2012-13 and 2013-14 financial years. We've got over 100 staff on the books, and we continue to recruit new staff. Our staff numbers increased by roughly a quarter in the last financial year. We have challenges that one would associate with a newly established department. They include expanding accommodation. We want to try to stay on the premises that is currently occupied by the DTI to just create integrated government where colleagues rub shoulders with each other, they work closely together, each with their own distinct mandate and focus, but not competing bureaucracies. We have challenges of securing appropriately skilled staff. We compete with the private sector salaries, and part of what the department's focus is to identify where in the policy and implementation area are some of the big skills gaps. And we face challenges of strengthening operational systems, making sure that they effective, but they're also not bureaucratic. Because we've inherited a very bureaucratic culture in government, and as a new department, the challenge is to find the way in which we can have smart governance, quick, simple, effective arrangements with a minimum of red tape, but the maximum of functional accountability. And then the mandate and work focus of EDD continues to evolve as government take ever larger part of the electoral mandate and as the new growth path is implemented. So in the last 9 months, the big focus on the NGP was on infrastructure, and so that means the department's focus in that period has been quite strongly on infrastructure. The department has a number of goals that set out in the strategic plan, and I am going to take chairperson that these are well known by members of the committee. They include the goal statement, the key indicators, jobs created, growth, employment ratio, and the distribution of earned income. There's a number of programs. The first program is a standard one on administration. And what that seeks to do is basically provide the strategic support and the administrative services, particularly to the ministry in its work in cabinet, parliament, government, SOEs, but also internationally and with stakeholders in the society. One of the key areas in this has been the implementation of the work of the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission. Secondly, to provide strategic support and administrative services to the Office of the Director General. And they include advice on legislation and policy, compliance, participation in the cluster system, support on administrative matters, and effective document flow. There are also audit and risk management services that we've begun to bring on stream more recently. It provides operational and administrative support to the department itself, legal services, HR, IT, finance, the range of back office support that is needed. And we've had to create that afresh. The budget, honorable members will have a sense of the flow over the MTF period. 60 million in 2012-13, rising to 67 million by 2014-15, with a relatively flat projected personnel number, but these are the maxima in this period. So it may be that we achieve close to the maximum in 2012-13, but we have a little bit of space in subsequent years to grow to the maximum. The second program, which is now the first frontline program, because that's a back office program I've indicated to you, is economic policy development. And the nice organogram there shows its core components, the growth path and the creation of decent work, policy, BEE, second economy, and research. It's a number of strategic objectives, and they include coordinating and monitoring the implementation of the NGP, implementing inclusive growth strategies, providing policy advice, regular engagement on policy issues. Among others, we had an economic development conference which is held annually, and I trust it was possible for some members of the select committee to attend, but it was a great success. And we also have an economic advisory panel that provides support to the ministry, and it includes, among others, Professor Joseph Stiglitz, who also been actively drawn into a number of matters in South Africa. So here's then the first front line, getting ideas aligned, making sure that we have fresh ideas, but that we also have a feedback loop. When we've got an idea, what actually is happening? Is our BEE policies working as we intended them to work? Do we find that even though the jobs numbers are growing, that they're growing in the right sectors that are sustainable over time? It's that kind of work that economic policy development does. The second program, let me first pause on the numbers. So the budget is 29 million. For 2012-13, rising to 32 million by the end of the MTF period, with a maximum target of about 26 employees, direct employees. Of course, they leverage in turn from the other programs' staff numbers. So they've got a much wider pool of people who they can draw on, but the people dedicated to the policy development area I had set out there. The third program is economic planning and coordination. This is the big one. This is the major part of the department. It deals with spatial, sector and national economic planning, investment, competitiveness and trade, financing and procurement, and the green economy. So those are the areas it focuses on. The strategic objectives are set out. They include developing plans linked to infrastructure, to industry, or to specific areas. Increase coherence between what we do and what provinces and local authorities do. Provide oversight to the IDC, or to CIFA, and channel public and private investment into economic development opportunities by unblocking the impediments to those. We've got some good examples there. Promote competitiveness for trade and decent work, and that means providing a strategic oversight to the work of the competition authorities and ITAC, but also engaging with international agencies and really pushing the African agenda, greater trade, greater integration, greater economic development across the continent. And beyond the continent, strengthening links with BRICS, with the European Union, and with the United States. We seek to leverage financing from the procurement processes of government for local jobs. So it's really how to make sure that if we're going to buy this bottle of water in any event for the committee, that the packaging, the bottle, hopefully the polymer feedstock that makes the bottle are all locally made. And work with the private sector to expand that. Continuing with the Economic Planning and Coordination Program, part of its work is to grow the green economy. And that means to identify projects, help to make sure that they can access the incentives that are available, and constantly support those that have a positive effect on the environment. On the money side, as you can see, this is where some of the more serious level of financial resources go to, 42 million in the current year, rising to 47 million, 38 personnel. And this is just the funding, obviously, to coordinate, manage all this work. Under this sits the actual investment funds that reach the private sector, which are enormous sums. In the case, for example, of the IDC, over the next 5 years, it would be 102 billion rand. In the case of small business funding, CIFA, over the MTF period, it would be in excess of 2 billion rand. So this is not the money that is actually allocated. This is the money that Parliament makes available for allocation through planning and coordinations, work, coordination, research, and so on. The final program is economic development and dialogue. One of the challenges in a democracy is to make sure consensus is built through the important process of voice, of sitting down with people, hearing them out, and seeing where we can reconcile interests, where we can't, obviously, to make a choice. And we work here on social dialogue and strategic frameworks, on sector and workplace dialogues, and not just the national ones, but also the sector ones, on capacity building for small businesses and civil society, and on the promotion of productivity, entrepreneurship, and innovation. The strategic objectives are set out as follows. We've led the work on the strategic frameworks. You know, when South Africa's challenge was to get back to growth during the recession, develop partnership agreements in key sectors, support capacity building for economic development, and create and coordinate knowledge networks. Let me go then to the numbers. 18 million set aside this year, rising to 20 million by 2014, and with a staff complement of about 16 people. I'd like briefly then, Chair, to go to risk management. We've identified a number of internal risks. We've just highlighted a few here. They include ensuring that we recruit and retain skilled staff, that our organizational structure and governance documents are appropriate, that we have adequate internal controls, that we expand office accommodation, and the external risks would include ensuring that we actually get coordination across government, real engagement with social partners. One of the single biggest risks, and we should really make it a separate category because it's not akin to the other risks, is to identify and manage the impact of global economic developments on the South African economy, an extremely integrated economy. If you take as an example an indicator of integration, our trade as a percentage of GDP is roughly the same as China's trade as a percentage of its GDP. And it's significantly higher than Brazil and the United States. So what happens elsewhere in the world does matter to us. It does impact on our jobs to a greater extent than many, many other developed and developing countries. This strategic plan that we're tabling this year includes for the first time work on the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Commission, established in the second half of last year. I've been requested to chair the policy secretariat and assemble the technical team. The technical team in turn has developed an infrastructure plan and now coordinates the operational elements for its implementation, and we've had to adjust the EDD structure to support the PICC in a number of ways. Our other work is with the public entities, the Competition Commission. Continue to prioritize key sectors. At the moment, we're focusing on anti-competitive conduct in the construction sector. We've given some more resources for the economic, for the Competition Commission, for the tribunal. It's a quasi-judicial body, and we've given it the necessary support. But obviously, its efficiency targets that you see in the more detailed strat plan and in its own strat plan are a function of the number of cases that are brought before it. So it's not proactive, it adjudicates what others bring to it. And finally, ITAC, it's begun the process of aligning itself to government's developmental agenda, and its key outputs lie in the area of international trade instruments and technical advice. There are a couple of public entities, the IDC. We've begun a process of restructuring its operations to support the new growth path, increase its investment target to 102 billion rand over 5 years, and integrate small business development and industrial development. So we don't have this big company promotion by the IDC and small company promotion by everybody else. It's to find a way in which, when we tackle the green economy, it's got to include the promotion of opportunities for smaller enterprises. When we do a major infrastructure program, that we do the same thing. The other public entities, CIFA, I'm happy to share the logo of CIFA with the committee. It's a small enterprise finance agency. It was launched on the 23rd of April. It's a wholly owned subsidiary of the IDC, and it brings together Kula, some of and the small business operations of the IDC. It will have 2 billion rand available over the next 3 years for lending, through fiscal transfers, reserves, and a shareholder loan from the IDC. More recently, we signed an agreement between the IDC and the China Development Bank for $100 million for small business development. And the entity will increase the availability of affordable finance to SMMEs. It will do so by working with the big banks, but also by opening a lending window directly to the public. In the next slide, slide 37, I point briefly to the budget impact of the different works across the department and its entities, starting here from with the transfers from EDD to different entities. And then the program structure on the next slide, the budget. Honourable members will see in this slide on page 40, we've taken the committee from 2008-09 right through to the current period with the anticipated expenditure over that period. and colleagues will see a total audited outcome in 2009-10 of 314 million, rising over this period to about 711 million by the outer years of the MTEF. Transfers, quite a critical part, the bulk of the monies that Parliament votes for the department is then redirected by the department to the Competition Commission, to the Tribunal, to ITAC, to SAMAF, which now will go to CIFA, to the IDC, for the Agro Processing Fund, to Kula in its various iterations. And then we've begun to identify partners, Wits University around training, proudly South African around the promotion of the Buy Local campaign, the South African Institute of Chartered Accountants around developing skills that smaller businesses can utilize. On the expenditure trends, these are really narratives to the main tables that I very briefly put on the screen. Expenditures expected to increase from about 600 million, 598 million, to 639 million over the MTEF, mainly compensation of employees and transfers and subsidies. There's an additional 225 million over the MTEF period, of which 6 million for improvement in conditions of service, 216 million for the IDC for actively promoting agro-processing investment, a reprioritization of, call it 16 million, 15.9 million, for IDC Youth Employment Strategy Fund, and a sum of about 4 million for improvement of conditions of service in ITAC over the period. We've shared with the select committee here in the written documents, and I summarize here select performance indicators. We've got 41 indicators across four programs. You may well ask where the 41 is not too many, but we've highlighted 9 of those here. Let me take 2 or 3 of them. The first one would be, let me run through all 9, Chair. The number of regulatory impact assessments, we've set a goal of at least 1 a year. Sector strategies produced, reviewed, or monitored 2 a year. Interventions promoting economic development through leveraging from state expenditure and procurement. Our goal is 12 this year, rising to 15 over the MTEF period. Value of special financing facilitated for small business or targeted NGP sectors and companies in distress, 5 billion a year. The number of spatial or infrastructure plans produced or reviewed each year, 15 for the first 2 years and 17 in the outer year. The reports on the green economy strategy, 2 a year. Interventions that create or save jobs, 4 a year. Social dialogue and capacity building engagements, about 10 a year. And economic development agreements facilitated with social partners, 10 each year. In the detailed presentation that we have circulated, we go into the objectives and measures for each of the programs. Just to highlight a few, in program one of the issues that we would test the program with is the level of strategic and operational support to principals, the planning, the reporting, the recruitment plan, those areas. Program 2, it would be matters like policy papers, policy platforms, analytical work on the data on the real economy, a developmental index, and beginning to work to create a formal and quantified framework that can link up the economic and social issues. In other words, a development model. B, policy frameworks, and work on establishing an institute. Program 3, some examples, proposals we submit to Cabinet, developing
sector plans and infrastructure plans, proposals for harmonizing national, provincial and local economic development plans, spatial planning and oversight. Program 3 would be matters like leveraging procurement, promoting international relations, growing the green economy and promoting the use of the agro-processing fund. Program 4 would be the number of meetings, PACs, those kind of ones. They set out in a lot more detail in the strategic plan, but they are, of course, summarized in this presentation. For this financial year, what's the big story? The big story is going to be infrastructure, actual cement, spades, sand, earth-moving equipment. In other words, to move from planning to implementation. Institutional capacity, having a stronger department, better capability, and building the capacity in the agencies, including CIFA. For the IDC, we want its project pipeline to be more proactive, spend less time waiting for great ideas and more time looking for great ideas. On ITAC, it's to get them to think less administratively, to look at the overall trade flows and the jobs impact and see how their work can facilitate the expansion of the economy and the growing of jobs. With the provincial and local economic partners, that's the provinces and the municipalities, key issue is skills. Real shortage of strong skilled officials across the other spheres of government, and we've got to work in partnership to strengthen that capacity. Monitor employment impact of policies, improve small business performance, that's the CIFA rollout, increasing the disbursements to small businesses, and continue to look at how we can get a more effective small business development program. We're working to support cooperatives in partnership with the DTI, better links with provinces, including better coordination with MINMAC. And here's an important issue for us internally, and that is to constantly get better value for money on the spending by EDD and strengthening its systems of oversight. So, Chairperson, I hope through this presentation, which we briskly went through some of the slides, the honourable members would be able to see that in less than 3 years, the department has established itself and it's built an initial capacity. It has played a key role in the development of some of the important frameworks of government, the new growth path, outcome 4 on jobs and growth, and the development of an infrastructure plan. It's focused on dialogue, and these focus on talking to the business community and to labor has resulted in 4 key social accords. We've made solid progress in implementing the strategic plan, considering the capacity challenges that will be an ongoing feature of any new department. We've got a new impetus on coordination, monitoring, evaluation, and reporting on the implementation of the NGP as our focus, so more work will be done there. And of course, EDD's mandate continues to evolve. It gets additional responsibilities as indeed more parts of the new growth path is rolled out. So I'd like to end, Chairperson, with a thank you to your committee for the way in which you've given support to us during the past financial year. We look forward to the NCOP session that we will be having within weeks on economic development vote. And in the work of the MINMAC, we think that there's an opportunity to coordinate a little bit more with the expertise that's available on the Select Committee. So thank you very much for the opportunity to brief the committee.
Thank you very much, Minister Patel, for the engagement that we have always good, you know, when the boss himself talk. Acting easy, then you don't have to take the flak. Or you don't have to say, no, wait, that's a political mandate or a political question, I'll come back, because we've got the politicians with us. Now, honourable members, you know, I've said to one of my comrades the other day, they were saying that economic development hardly makes a turn at the NCOP. Then I said that do we give economic development a reason to come to us on a frequent basis? But I think with your presentation now, Minister, and what you have outlined here, we have got enough reason now to engage more with you, CFO, and acting DG and Minister, to see you more with us, because we are embarking on oversight visits specifically to provinces and local government as per our mandate in the Constitution. But members, if we not take up your time, I see Honourable Nguni and Honourable Van Lingen are itching for questions. You want to ask a question before you want to go? Let me give you the first bite. Baba Nguni, is it fine? May I give Honourable Van Lingen the first bite? She has to leave.
Yeah, I agree, Chairperson, but I was saying that take an approach that if she raised some questions, can we perhaps concentrate on that question, because you might have the same questions, some of us, or related questions. We deal with that. If you say only economic, macroeconomic policy, then we deal with macroeconomic policy and finish with it. If we're discussing green economy, let's deal with it so that everybody got a question on the issue, we finish it. To be more engaged with the minister, I think. I don't know my approach, but I agree that she...
It's up to you. You must prioritize your questions. Totally up to you, members. You must prioritize your questions. If you feel that you want to jump from micro, macro, and green economy, and to mining, it's all up to you. Honorable Flamingham.
Chairperson, thank you very much. Minister, thank you very much. I was not very hopeful that you would finish within an hour, and you've done it. Because it's 50 slides, and I thought, this is a big one. But you've done well. Thank you very much, and also to the members of the department. Chairperson, the minister said all the right things about the NCOP and the provinces, but I see very little here. And I wonder whether we mustn't be more briefed in future on what's happening in Minmec so that we understand where it's going, because and if the minister not doing a budget debate in the NCOP, then maybe he can tell us more about it, because serious things must be addressed in our provinces, and that's why we're here. So if we look at, for instance, there was a solar water geyser factory or production plant in the Eastern Cape in East London, and that had to close down because it couldn't. There was no order, or there were no orders to make it economically viable. Now all of a sudden a new one producing 8,000 units a month has opened in Gauteng. It boggles my mind. Why not support the one that has been established at quite some cost? Then the other question I have is develop and implement, monitor and evaluate strategies for the youth employment and second economy. You know, we're sitting with this 9 billion rand job fund. Are we just going to make plans? Because this whole thing is all plans. And we want to get to the nitty-gritty so that we can get going and, as the minister says, get to the implementation. But there's no definite so much on that implement and so much on that. And then my last point was my first point, and that's strengthen the links with provinces through better coordination via MINMEC, but then also via the NCOP. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I actually have got only four main questions. However, I would say under macroeconomic policy, I'd like to know what the department, whether the macroeconomic policy within this period, is it in line with the goals of the department?
or what does the department would like to see in the macroeconomic policy or macroeconomic arrivals that will enhance the achievement of the department's goals. In terms of the currency, we've heard the John Stiglitz yesterday that he says we rather look at the currency because it's incompetitive, and the governor of the Reserve Bank, Chief Marcus, has already said something else different, that he would like to see the currency floating. Now, those are the different contradictions. How does the department intend to handle those issues as it moves forward in implementing strategic plans in this MTF period? And also on the issue of inflation, you have seen the administered prices rising, you know, fuel rising, e-tolling, food prices are going up. Then that vis-a-vis the consumer, how does the department see itself charging through those waters? And secondly, Chairperson, on the economic model. Also, Stiglitz suppose that now we need perhaps to follow the Chinese model. What does the minister think on our economic model? Is it proper that perhaps we follow the Chinese model, or we need our own South African homemade model that will suit our situation? And then on the labour policy, Chairperson, the minister mentioned that they are actually meeting with unions and private sector. But we know that the main issue now, according to the Free Market Fundamentalists, fundamentally, is that our job, our labor laws are too much strict. We need to be more flexible. As a result, we've got the job funds. What do you, the minister, think in terms of the jobs fund, the youth service corp? From Pulukwani said you don't need the labor brokers. We are now regularizing the labor brokers instead of paying them. Is that a shift from the strict, inflexible labor policy to a more flexible one? And that's just, you know, the minister's views and the department, the way it's taking in view of that. And also on skills, how does the minister see that we retain skills vis-à-vis the increasing public sector wages, the inequality that exists. Currently, the DGs are earning more than 1.2 million, and the lowest rank is paid perhaps, 80,000 a year. How do we close that gap if we, on the other hand, want to retain the skilled people? And also the union activity, because as the unions are fighting to retain their members, they make sure that they get a lovely wage, minimum. On the other hand, the issue that you've mentioned of productivity vis-a-vis the survival of the unions. As you know, that the unions were basically, when they formed in the 80s, the 70s, they were actually protest organizations against existing then apartheid regime. But as we move over to more inclusive economy, don't you think that perhaps the unions have to focus their activity now for the betterment of their employees or their members? And last question on SME development. I know it's basically the DTI. Objectives, make sure that there's the same development. But what is the department doing? Because I see that the department is the overall player in making sure that there is growth in the economy. We've got the DFIs that, in my view, some of them are still very inefficient, and we still channel the money through the TBSA and the IDC, of which at the end of the day, those the SMMEs are not served. How does the department see this impeding within this MTF in their obtaining the objective? And also, the minister talk about the cooperatives. We've been informed by CCI that there's a lot of failure rate, especially in KZN, of cooperatives. And recently, I think, if I'm not mistaken, early this year or last year, if it was not there, I think the company that did a survey in Soweto, it found out that about, if I'm not mistaken, 500 companies, the SMEs have died or they're longer operative as compared to the year 2000, 2009. And then the failure rate was too high, according to, I don't know, the company that did the survey. Then how does the department then see that there is SME development in the economy, and that all those that are being established in the survival rate increases? I'll just stop the question on the SME.
I was wondering, you were going from macro to micro to... okay. Honourable Abrams.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, and thanks, Honourable Nguni. You covered us, I think, very well. Honourable Minister, my question is on the jobs, the 5 million jobs you envisage for 2020. I want to know how sustainable would it be and to keep people having the jobs, and also a breakdown on the jobs. Because we find sometimes, like, there's a problem in the EPWP where people are employed, but it's just numbers, and they're employed for a short period. If we can, you know, more or less know how we will be developing these people's skills so that they could be engaged for as long as possible. Thank you.
Honourable Nambi.
Thanks, Chair. Yep, part of my other questions have been correctly covered by the previous members, especially Mungoni. But I'd like to add on the one of the comments that we made yesterday by Stiglitz, as is one of the economic advisory panel, the view of the minister in relation to what was raised by Stiglitz yesterday. Then the second one is in relation to how the department is structured currently. I thought you'll intervene, Chairperson, when they're doing the introduction, as you normally do. They deprive us an opportunity to understand who's here, except the minister and the acting DG. The rest, they just said they're coming from the department. So it's making it impossible for us to understand who's representing the department, because it can be any other person from the department, and I think that is very important. And we might think we are knowing people who are representing the department here, yet we are not. So I think that is to be corrected. The third one, Honourable Minister, it's about the funds for the 142 posts that you touched. It will make us to come in once you have given us your annual report, or if we are saying we are doing that effective oversight. We are not going to be in a position to be able to have the department accounting, because we have covered two financial years instead of one. So for us to be able to say in next, once you give us the report of this current financial year, we're not going to be able to be precise in terms of the posts that are supposed to be filled in this current financial year, because when you are doing the presentation, you presented 142, but it was meant for two different financial years. The other question is in relation to unemployment. Yeah, I've noticed that from it has been reduced by 0.1% from 24% to 23.9% between January 2011 till January 2012. Given that we have this new growth target, that is 15% by 2020, what does the department envisage unemployment and economic growth rate for the end of this current financial year? The other one is about the green economy, whether I'm the one who missed the budget for it, because it's a sub-program that is very important, and if you can elaborate a bit about it, Minister, I missed the budget for that one, because I'm convinced that it's one of your important ones. Then the last one, Chair, is the one that was topical, we were reading about it, the Walmart Massmart issue. The implications of the appeals court ruling, a little bit of information, and how is that going to affect, is there any implications to the department current budget, and what lesson was learned from that experience and the implications going forward? I'm raising that, Minister, because you'll understand that as members representing interests of different provinces, at times we are tempted to rely on what is being reflected by media without getting the privileged information. So it will really assist us in this forum to get the privileged information so that we can be able to speak out of a very informed position instead of relying on some of the distortion that we might be reading about. Thanks, Chairperson. Otherwise, it was a very good presentation.
Thank you, Honorable Gambi. Honorable Gamere.
Thanks, Chair. I will have a few comments and a few questions. Firstly, to you, Honorable Minister, I want to personally thank you for attending the committee today. You have been a very good example in the executive. I don't think there's a single meeting that you missed on economic development. And it has been an issue in the Society of Ministers not attending committee meetings. So I would really like to thank you and keep it up. Another comment, even though it won't be a response to Honorable Mungoni, but KwaZulu-Natal is one of the most, you know, progressive provinces on cooperatives. Out of all the provinces in South Africa, very excellent. Minister, in your presentation, this issue on slide 7, any plan to exist systematically from the social dependency, deal with economic development, and want to create jobs, but there is this issue that is bothering us as a country, the social dependency. In KwaZulu-Natal, we've even said to MECs, please stop posting about figures. This year we've got 12 million, next year 14. We just want any plan to exist. Is there any possibility to break down the target for jobs per year on the 5 million by 2020 so that by 2019 we don't wake up and say, hey, we're still on 2 million? As a comment, we appreciate that the department has got an unqualified audit, but we do want to stress that we want a clean audit in this financial year. The other one is on your challenges of space. I always say I'm always defeated on this point, but I pursue it until I win everybody. Are you thinking of buying or leasing? Because I'm against the leasing of buildings, because I believe government is here until the Son of God will come back. So buying buildings would actually save departments or government. The other one is what capacity is being prepared to implement the work of the PICC. Huge work. It needs some good, you know, people with skills and all that. On page 25, there's a word I once heard, I think 3 or 4 years ago, of integrated infrastructure plan, just as good as the IDPs, because one department would think of building a school without knowing that there might be a crash or my police station in future. In your plans on those infrastructure plans, are you integrating to see on the long-termism that if we put an infrastructure here, it must be used by other departments or other sectors in the long term? If you put in a sewer pipe, it must not be for 5 years. There might be a township that is being built in 10 years' time. And how to provinces and municipalities link into this? I saw in the municipalities a lot of min-mac and so on. But are you going to collect these infrastructure plans? KwaZulu-Natal just delivered one. I'm going to reconcile them. I'm happy that you've highlighted the key challenges facing the IDC. But I would like to hear what has been planned to deal with these challenges. And also to say that from the Department of Trade and Industry, the IDC is very key. It was key when it was still there also. We'll discuss with the DFIs on their plans to vigorously assist SMMEs. We'll give that date to the minister, because we'll target the IDC because it has got quite a big chunk of money. Lastly, years ago we had some growth, but it was jobless. Now with these plans, and we want to create jobs, are we going to shift the unemployed, those that are in the social security network, to the jobs that are going to be sustainable? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Gihari.
Thank you, Chairperson. One of the strategic plan and budget under the main focus is jobs and mining, jobs and African development. And from page 14, Minister gave an example of the teamwork that was shown by the ministerial committee under the climate change. And all of us can witness that it was a success. But then now, if you go to provinces where there are mining, for example, the province of Limpopo and Tawazimbi, people are mining there, and the villagers are only enjoying that noise and pollution. So I was thinking that, or I was of an idea that how about these ministers can come together again and work together in order to help all these places where there are mines, so that the people also enjoy what the miners are reaping. I believe when God was creating the earth, He made sure that there are mines underneath, so that people who are going to stay there are going to enjoy the benefits out of that. But then now it is really difficult. If you go to the traditional areas where the royal families are staying, where there are mines, during time of burial, they cannot even afford to bury their loved ones, but they fought so hard during birth to protect the land. So, I don't know how can I put my question, but what I want to say is, can the minister do something in order to help those people in the rural area? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Khalid.
Well, Chairperson, I say first thank you very much for those questions. I think they cover both program as well as policy issues. And I'm going to, with your permission, run through them in the order that they were asked. And I start first with the observation that we took the brief that we were given for the Select Committee fairly seriously, which is take the strategic plan and budget and do a presentation on that. So it's largely forward-looking. It's an attempt to say what it is that we will be doing rather than principally what we have been doing. It's largely focused on the key strategic goals in the strat plan, as opposed to the operational issues, what we do in each province. But there may be value in future in doing a presentation that looks at a couple of different provinces and to show how the storyline of economic development come together in that particular province. So I would be Are they interested in thinking through with the select committee how we do that? So let me start with the first question that was asked, which is the provincial information. We will provide some provincial information in the budget vote. But I think what we should consider is inviting the chair of the select committee on an ongoing basis to the MinMax, and for the chair to have an opportunity then to brief the committee members, because that's currently our principal forum in which we interact with provinces on matters other than infrastructure. On infrastructure, we have a very detailed engagement at premier level with all 9 premiers in the PICC. But we're also going through a process now of launching the strategic integrated projects on infrastructure. And again, I'm going to ask the department just to take note of the comments that have been made, Honourable Chair, and to see whether we shouldn't find some way in which at least one representative of the select committee could be available for some of the public launches of the infrastructure projects, because we do an enormous amount of work at provincial level, but obviously the system of government is we don't pull Parliament into that. So you can't see it from the highlights we've given, but we're quite proud of some of the work. I think in some areas it's going well, in other areas clearly we have to do a lot more. And that goes to the question of plans versus the nitty-gritty. This is a strategic plan session. And so by the nature, the first honorable member who asked the question perhaps was expressing a desire to have more detailed information, which I think we need to do separate to the strat plan. Let's take the example of a solar water geyser factory. These are not government factories. They're private enterprise. Company sets up a factory, takes risks, it engineers its processes, it then tenders for business. If someone comes along, is more efficient, does it better, sets up their factory, and their competitor goes out of business, generally speaking, as long as the aggregate employment is rising, the total employment is rising in the country, we would not step in. If the factory is in a very vulnerable area, we may want to see what we can do to mobilize support for that. If it's a state-owned factory, it would be different, but we don't really have state-owned enterprises in the green economy. They're largely in these kind of things like solar water heaters, private sector companies. On the jobs fund, I've taken note of the comments around the second economy and youth that was raised, and I would be happy to share that with the DBSA, who is the fund manager of the jobs fund. On macroeconomic policy, which was the next set of questions that came up, I think EDD doesn't have its own macroeconomic policy preference as a department. We think and act as government. There can only be one government, one set of policies. Obviously, each department brings a different dimension and focus to the development of that policy. And the macroeconomic framework that EDD subscribes to is the one that was adopted at Cabinet. And that's the one set out in the new growth path. And what does it say? It says that looking at the long term, what we really need to do, we need to have, number one, a competitive exchange rate, because that's a critical driver, both of exports, but also of supporting your domestic market. Second, we've got to cut down the interest rate differential between our economy and other leading economies. Our interest rates are low by historical standards, but we don't measure ourselves against history, we measure ourselves against competitors, and we're in an era, a global era of low interest rates. And so we're supportive of the Reserve Bank seeking to contain inflation, and at the same time we're supportive of companies needing to find a cheaper source of capital.
some of these represents difficult trade-offs. So what have we done practically? Give a couple examples. First thing is we've got the IDC to mobilize 105 billion rand, or 102 billion rand, I'm sorry, 102 billion rand over 5 years at a discount to market rates. One part of its facility, one part of it, it's making available at prime less 3%. That is, you know, a significant discount to what the commercial banks would require. It does that for programs where there's a big jobs impact. So here's an example where we're using targeted interventions to bring down the cost of capital. Another example is we've recently mobilized monies, as I've indicated, with the China Development Bank, but also domestically with the Unemployment Insurance Fund. We've got 4 billion rand now that's available from the, I should really be saying all of this in the budget speech, Honorable Chair, so I'm making the department nervous here. I think now, what are we going to have left to say? But basically, those are examples of trying to deal with the interest rate challenge that South African companies face. Is there space to do more? Well, in any policy environment, with any government, there's always space to talk and to focus and so on. But markets are sensitive, and therefore we don't publicize the different ideas and thoughts in public fora. By their nature, they managed inside a government system. It's what Brazil does, it's what the United States does, it's what China does, it's what South Africa does. On the question of inflation and consumers, we're still in a relatively low inflation environment compared to the historic highs that we had reached. But we've got to be fairly vigilant, because in South Africa, one driver of past inflation has been the high levels of monopoly, cartels and price fixing in the economy. And so our hope is to give consumers relief by acting quite decisively against companies that abuse their market position. And you will recall the bread and flour investigation, the chickens investigation that we've done, the steel mill investigation, across a wide front of products, some of them consumer products. We've been uncovering evidence of collusion, finding companies and getting them to commit to change behavior, and then we scrutinize the subsequent conduct very, very carefully. What kind of economic model do we need? Clearly a South African one. We can learn from other countries. We can learn from other countries. But in the past, we tended to learn disproportionately only from what came out of Washington. We're in an era now where all over the world people are saying, hang on, look at what China is doing, look at what Brazil is doing, look at what India is doing, or Vietnam, or Malaysia, Korea. These are all very interesting examples. So in constructing a South African model, there's a lot of interesting lessons we can learn from other developing countries. The old Washington consensus that created a rigid framework for developing countries not only were inappropriate, not only did it not forestall the global economic crisis, but at the first sign of problems it was tossed out of the window by its own originators. So today, the position of the IMF on a number of areas is very different to what it was before the global economic crisis. And I think that the lesson we've learned out of this is one has to be thoughtful about economic policy. You've got to look at the facts, be influenced by the evidence, do your own work as a country, take policies that puts country first and put Africa first as a continent, and be less inclined to do what is the current fashion. So it means investing in research capabilities as a country. It means creating a feedback loop that when we do policy, Let's see what is the impact. Not all of our policies will work brilliantly. That's the nature of policy. You know, a farmer doesn't stop planting simply because every seed doesn't result in crops. But the farmer knows, look, you know, this part of the land, I shouldn't be farming. Or these kind of seeds don't work well. Or this seed doesn't work with too little water or too much water. And you adapt constantly. And that's what public policy is about. For a long period, there was this myth that was propagated that government must just get out of the way and markets will solve problems. Well, markets wiped out trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars of wealth that was created by human beings. But at the same time, markets also have enormous power and capability to promote the welfare. You know, you can't choose between state and market. They play different roles. Markets are what you and I decide when we go into a shop and we buy this item rather than that item. So it's about finding the right connection between state and market, as opposed to a debate that seeks to pose state and market as alternatives to each other. So that's the South African model we're developing, of a country that's more self-confident, that it must develop policies suited to its needs, it must promote jobs here, it must promote economic development here, and our long-term future lies on this continent. We are Africans, we've got to build this continent, we've got to harness its energy and its capabilities. And that's what is the South African growth model, if you like. In our growth model, and someone raised the question of jobless growth, jobs is given the primary focus. 5 million new jobs by 2020. We've put that as the principal target, not the rate of economic growth. Growth is important. We need to grow the economy. But it's growth towards a purpose. That's the important thing. And the purpose is the increase in the number of jobs in the economy. I'll come back to this in a moment. Let me just go through a few of the other related questions. Labor market policies. Start with labor laws versus flexibility. I think what our experience has shown us is that you can have countries and companies that respect worker rights and are successful. A country, good example is Germany. It has very strong labor rights dispensation. It's also one of the biggest exporters of manufactured goods right now. High wages, strong unions, strong social dialogue, and a successful economy. And you can have countries with weak labor regimes, repression of unions, passing of terrible laws, and so on, who are at the bottom of the growth league table too. The difference lies in other matters. It lies in how well you develop your human resource base. Do you invest in your people so that they're capable of producing more bottles of water or more microphones or more laptop computers more cheaply because of the skills they have? Do you have a research and innovation culture that creates new products? Do you have an infrastructure that can take your goods to market quickly? Do you have an enterprise culture that brings energetic people in the society to start companies, to take risks in producing goods or providing services? It's those things that make or break the success of a company and of a country. And that's where we're focusing on at the moment. So our labor laws is not the challenge, the fundamental challenge to our competitiveness. Is government going in a more flexible direction at the moment on labor brokers? No, on the contrary. Government, there's still talks that have been taking place, and Parliament will be considering the matter shortly. But government has made it clear that there's been massive abuse of labor brokers. We can't tolerate the existing arrangement where ordinary South Africans are deprived of the rights that you as parliamentarians have voted they should have, simply because they are reclassified by their companies as labor brokers or as independent contractors. And so our job as government is to place before the legislature the evidence to suggest that we can find a smart way of amending the laws that can have positive effects on the rights of our people, and at the same time that is compatible with the economic goals, the broader economic goals. So this debate will be wending its way through Parliament shortly, and then I think we can go a bit more public on what are the compromises that the different parties, Labour, business and others, are prepared to accept. Of course, everybody is going to ratchet up the temperature right now. The unions will indicate that the reforms have not gone far enough. Business will say it's going to be damaging to the economy. Every time any labour law is changed, there is a process of very robust public debate. I remember this very clearly from 1988 under apartheid, when they introduced the labour law amendments, through to 95 when the democratic state introduced the Labour Relations Act, and 97, 98 the Basic Conditions of Employment Act, thereafter the Employment Equity Act, the 2000 amendments. So, except that that's part of what goes with this negotiation. We're trying to realign the powers of parties on the shop floor. But what for us is critical is we've got to stop the abuse of ordinary workers by unscrupulous operators. And I think there's a number of people in the business community that have now recognized that that is necessary and vital. I think, honorable members, one of the important observations that was made related to the challenge of productivity. Unions during the apartheid period were focused principally on protecting the rights of workers and overthrowing a system that was unrepresentative. In a democratic era, unions are still about protecting the interests of workers. But they now have a partner in government. So we need to promote a developmental unionism that looks longer term, that recognizes that productivity can be an important gain for a society. It's a way of creating wealth. But unions have legitimate and valid concerns around productivity. If you increase productivity and you keep the consumption levels the same, if the market stays static but productivity rises, then it will lead to job losses. So what you need to do when you rise, when you increase productivity, is you've got to increase the size of the market. You've got to, people must buy more goods and services. And that goes to what the Japanese were able to do at the end of the Second World War. They did a productivity pact in which business committed that no Japanese worker would be retrenched. Labor committed that every Japanese worker will work with their company to increase productivity. And Japan exported a lot of the products, and they expanded the wages of workers so that the domestic market grew in size. And through those two ways, they were able to achieve both increases in productivity and increases in jobs. And that, I think, is a challenge that we face now, to build a broader commitment to productivity, but also a broader commitment to the protection of employment and increasing the size of employment. Skills, how do we retain skills in the public sector, and how do we deal with the wage gap in the public sector? Well, obviously, the wage season is underway right now, and I think one of the issues that's going to come up is the wage gap. What should be the increases to lower paid workers? What should be the increases at the top? But in the new growth path, government floats an idea. It says, look, this is a preliminary proposal, an initial proposal. And it floats an idea that says, at the very top, there should be very strong wage moderation, up to the point even in some categories of no salary or executive bonus increases. And in the middle, there has to be wage increases that's more consistent with inflation. And at the bottom, there has to be wage increases that is higher than inflation, so that over time, you compress your wage curve. In fact, income inequality is now one of the serious problems in South Africa and elsewhere in the world. We've got to be able to do something about it. It means different parts of a society have to contribute differently. So while I obviously can't pronounce on the current wage bargain, and we don't operate in a way that in, you know, shooting from the hip we make policy, at the same time we're sending a signal that we're uncomfortable with this rising, or this very high levels of income inequality in the society, and we've got to do something about it. But if you do that, how do you retain skills in the public sector? Part of it is in the wage area, but a big part of it is not necessarily wages, because not every person makes their decisions purely on the size of the income they can get. If that was the case, then there are many people in the upper echelons of journalism that would not be in journalism. There would be members of parliament who can, as lawyers and other professionals, earn more, who would have to leave parliament. Your decisions to work in a certain place is the result of many things. And we have to ask the question, do we create a good enough environment in the public sector? Have we made too many rules? We create a tick-box mentality that stifles the creativity of our people. Do we reward initiative well? Not necessarily financially. And those are things that government will have to grapple with, rather than simply seeking to compete with the private sector on salaries. Where to put, you know, the top civil servants or the top political leadership salaries at the same level as the top in the private sector, it would be scandalous. It would be enormously higher than what it is at the moment. We can't. We don't wish to. But we've got to create an environment that keeps people in the public sector because they feel they can make a commitment to their country and they can make a contribution to the future. Briefly, going to the role of economic development and small business development, there's a few things we do. The first thing is our job is to bring the funding together in a coherent whole. So we've now amalgamated three small business funding envelopes. We're going to save 20 million rand a year, I'm told, out of that, which is money that can go then to the end beneficiaries, to the small businesses. But that's a very small part of what the small business agency must do. Its bigger job must be to make the system work more effectively. At the moment, the bureaucracy absorbs too much money. So that has to be cured. But even where money goes to small businesses, they often go as subsidies, and as long as the subsidy is there, the small business or the cooperative stays in business. When that subsidy is over, the small business or the cooperative folds, and sometimes the individuals form a new small business or a new co-op to start sucking the milk again from the cow. Now that's not a sustainable model. So one of the challenges we've given CIFA is to show us that it can come up with a more sustainable model in which the state supports in the short term as part of a program to move small businesses and cooperatives into economic viability. It's not true that co-ops need to be subsidized for life. There are many, many examples across the world of very, very successful cooperatives that don't get ongoing public support. Public support is very important at the start. But in Spain, for example, Spain is not always the best example to use nowadays given its challenges, but one success in the Spanish economy is a co-op called Mondragon that currently employs close to 100,000 people. And they're not in your low-tech parts of the economy, they're in the very high-tech advanced parts of the Spanish economy. And they export quite significantly, so it's a very big player in Spain. In the United States, in India, in Thailand, in Italy, in a number of other countries, co-ops are a vital part of that economic fabric. In South Africa, co-ops used to be bigger and more powerful in the past than they are now. If you think about it,
Clover Milk. It's one of the big dairy producing companies, was a cooperative. The wine making was done through KWV, the cooperative. Wool was done through BKB, a wool growers cooperative. And there were many other agricultural cooperatives. But in that period of 1994, many of these cooperatives became corporatized. They changed their legal position from a co-op to a company. And you're not going to have effective rural development without investing in rurally based cooperatives. And so we're now sitting down with the DTI to see what can be done more smartly on cooperatives. Part of it is to get, I think, the observation that the DFIs are not always effective for small business development is fair. But instead of us accepting it, we're going to require them to become more effective. Because it would take us tens of millions, hundreds of millions of rands to build the internal capacity in EDD that the IDC has. And yet the IDC is public money. So we will have public money in an agency that in the past has not focused enough on small business. And because it hasn't done that, we now want to create that same capacity inside EDD or DTI or wherever. So we said, no, the IDC has got to be refocused so that one of its core performance issues is to become more capable in the small business lending area. The co-op failure rate, I think, is in part because our system incentivizes people to apply for money. So when you need money, you think, well, of all the government programs, one of it is co-op money. So let's form a couple of people into a cooperative and we access the public money. Now that's not a sustainable cooperative. It will last as long as the money is around. So I think our challenge with co-ops is very big. I'm particularly keen to publicize what I think has been a strong focus on cooperatives in KZN. I think they've been very focused on it. We now need to partner them to lift up the basic business skills of people in cooperatives. Because without that, the cooperatives become dependent on the state. So it's really working with provinces that have invested strongly on cooperatives. The 5 million new jobs, how sustainable? Well, our intention is that these are sustainable jobs. Now, sustainable jobs, of course, mean different things. When you build a power station, those jobs normally last 5-6 years. That's the construction period. But if you only build one power station, then at the end of that period, there's no more jobs. But if you build a major construction industry, and you have a 20-year infrastructure project pipeline, then those workers move from site to site. Some of the jobs are your permanent BMW, Mercedes-Benz kind of jobs. In the new growth part, we've got in the annex here, you'll find all the numbers of the jobs in the different sectors. But some of the jobs by their nature are seasonal. Farming jobs, agro-processing jobs. So they're a mix of different jobs, and our intention would be to try to promote the sustainability of those jobs. Can we break these down year by year? Well, job numbers don't work like that because they're the subject of many different things. I'll give an example. Cabinet at the beginning of last year set the jobs target of 250,000 new jobs for the first year of the NGP. 250,000. What happened in reality is we overperformed. The economy managed to create 365,000 new jobs. So that is about more than 100,000 above the target. But had China's economy slowed down last year, which is not something we control, our jobs numbers would also have been more modest. So we must be cautious. Some part of the jobs numbers we control directly. Some part of the job numbers are the subject of processes way beyond our control. So it's like saying, soil needs a certain level of water.
You can control some of the water with a hose pipe or the irrigation system, but you can't say when it rains or when there's going to be drought. That's outside of your control. There's a higher power that determines those kind of things. Now, of course, in economics, it's not the higher power in the spiritual sense, but there are forces outside of one economy that similarly determines that. And therefore, planning in a government is constantly looking at the data, projecting forward, adjusting, seeing, okay, this isn't working, we've got to substitute that. I'll give a concrete example. When the steel, the iron ore imports to the European Union slowed down dramatically because Europe was going into a recession, we sat with the real possibility that we could have massive job losses in South Africa. But what helped us was we could identify China as the opportunity. We looked at the aggregate data, we saw the Chinese economy is growing fast, we got good geopolitical relationships with China. China needs iron ore, it made contracts with private sector companies like Kumba, and China's imports of South African iron ore just shot up. So that helped to stabilize jobs that would have been lost. And that's what the task of economic management is. That's what an economic manager does. It's not that you publish 5 years ahead, you know, month by month, what is going to happen. Economies are too dynamic for that kind of approach. How do we view Stiglitz's comments? Interesting and thoughtful. He's a very eminent economic commentator. He's the ex-chief economist of the World Bank. He's a Nobel Economics Laureate. He's the president of the International Economic Association, which brings all professional economists across the world together. So clearly, you could hardly find a better caliber of thinker. And therefore, he's on our panel, and we thoughtfully engage with him. But ultimately, when policy is made, you've got to take many different inputs into account. The views of advisors, the realities that you face on a day-to-day basis in government, the policy positions that government is committed to, that it pre-announced, your commitments to international investors, and so on. All of those go into the making of policy. But his comments are important and thoughtful ones. The structure of the department is set out in last year's annual report and again in the strat plan. The funds for the 142 posts. I think our biggest challenge is we don't want to appoint people simply to meet a departmental, ministerial or parliamentary target. If we said we want to employ 10 extra people this year, but we don't get the right applicants, it is more honest not to make an appointment than to make the appointment simply because it will mean no criticism in Parliament or no criticism from the Minister towards the Department. We've got to have our priorities and our what is important must be the right ones. It's not a tick box thing, you know, this Department has met all of its jobs goals. But underneath that, it may be that we're not employing the right people. So we're a small department, we're looking for skilled people, we've got to be able to employ people as they come into the market. That's our challenge. That's our job. And therefore, we hope we can achieve the full 142 in year one. If we do, then in year two, we don't increase it. But I suspect we won't. So I suspect we'll always have a bit of a slack. How much of that slack is subject to the applicants who come when we place the adverts and the people that are identified when we headhunt? That's really our challenge that we're sitting with and that we're working through. The unemployment rate, I think it's a complex thing. We shouldn't just take what has happened to the unemployment rate because the unemployment rate is a technical calculation that's got more than one variable. Let me very quickly illustrate it, and I know I've got to begin to wrap up, Chair. Let's say the South African labor market is 100 people. Let's say 10 people don't work. Then you'll say the unemployment rate is 10%. But we measure people who work and people who don't work, among others, by whether they're prepared to work and whether they've looked for a job. So if you go through a recession and 20 people decide, look, we're not going to look for a job anymore, we are discouraged. 20 people and they don't look for a job, and 10 people look for a job, then technically our unemployment rate is 10 out of 80, not 10 out of 100. In other words, our unemployment rate can go up or down irrespective of whether more people are in jobs or not. So what we look at is, what's the total number of people actually working? The month before the new growth path was published, it was 12.9 million. In December last year, it was 13.4 million. For the 12-month period, January 1st of January 2011 to 31 December 2011, the net new jobs, in other words, some jobs were lost, some jobs were gained, the overall increase, the net impact, was 365,000 for the year. That is a very solid achievement. If we can maintain that level of achievement, we are well set to get to the point where we can reach the 5 million new jobs. The year before, we lost 120,000 jobs. So in 2010, 120,000 jobs lost. The next year, 365,000 jobs gained. So the trajectory is going in the right direction. A number of other very interesting questions on the green economy. I think when we do more detailed discussions, we'll go through that. Walmart, we would be happy to have a, when the legal proceedings are concluded, would be a good time to give a fairly detailed assessment of the lessons learned. We think there's some valuable lessons that have come out of this. But there's one thing that's important. Government must have the appetite to do the right thing, even if it's unpopular. The law says government has the right to intervene when employment or the impact on other industries or on small businesses could potentially be negative. The fact that government hasn't in the past intervened regularly is not an argument why it should not do so. So we've grown as this government an appetite to do the right thing and to ensure that the powers that are given in the Competition Act are indeed exercised. And I think that is, it's an important message to communicate to Parliament, because Parliament passes law, but our responsibility as government is to carry out those laws. In the Walmart matter, we have carried out what the law requires of us. And we've done it, even though some of the public commentariat have been concerned about it, we've done it because it's the right thing to do. Because the available evidence placed before us indicated that there could potentially be very negative consequences of the transaction, and that the competition authorities need to know that, and that they need to consider appropriate conditions to mitigate those negative consequences. So I would be happy to do a more detailed engagement, I think, as the legal processes wend their way through, because we try not to say too much while the courts are considering this, and the courts will be returning to this matter in probably the next 2 months' time when the expert report is finalized. I would concur with the Honorable Member who talked about social dependency. Jobs is the most important anti-poverty strategy. It's as long as our jobs strategy is not yet achieving the numbers we want that we have to rely on social grants, but ultimately the most successful way of combating poverty is jobs. There will be South Africans who will need grants because of ill health, children in extremely poor environments and so on, and so there's a role for social protection, but you can't have that as your principal strategy against poverty. The principal strategy has to be to grow the jobs in the economy, to have a growth path that is jobs rich and that is decent jobs rich, that provides decent incomes for working families. On the building, do we want to buy, do we want to lease? Well, we want to be a subtenant of the DTI for now, so that we spend our time on economic development, not on worrying about being a landlord and what color paint and the furniture. You know, it's easy for ministers and DGs to spend a lot of time on that, because it's pleasant things to do, you know. But we sit with an economic challenge, a major economic challenge, and I would like every working hour of the department and the ministry to be spent on our core challenges. And when we're more successful in getting that right, then perhaps I think we can start to look at buildings in future, but not right now. capacity for the PICC, we're building a great capacity. We're employing people directly on EDD's books, and we're pulling in people from other public agencies to support the PICC. Yes, we're integrating infrastructure projects very strongly. I would love at some point to do a broader presentation to a joint session of the portfolio committee, the select committee, maybe a few of the different committees on the infrastructure plan, and you'll see the level of detail and integration that there is at local level that's beginning to develop. It's not perfect yet, but it's beginning to develop quite well. Lots has been done to deal with the IDC challenges. For the last year and a half, they feel they've been through constant restructuring of mandate and focus. Excellent results in some areas. I mean, one tiny example, the IDC used to take 84 days, if my memory serves me, to turn around an application on average from when you write to them and when they give you an answer. We've brought that down now to 50 days. So we've slashed, you know, a significant number of days out of that. We still want to bring it further down, even below that. So time won't allow me to go through all of that now. And then the idea of local communities getting more benefit from mining, I think it's a valid and important consideration, not just local communities, but in fact, South Africans. And that's part of what is a broader review that is taking place sometimes fairly noisily in the public domain, where certainly some of the political parties, I think, are beginning to grapple with that. And political parties are often the first place where ideas originate. And then they come through the system of elections and so on, and they influence government. So we're doing some work as government, but we also welcome the interventions by political parties to think through how South Africans can get more value from the mining industry. Chair, I've not answered every single question, and I haven't answered the questions that I have answered sufficiently detailed, but I've tried to cover enough of a spread of them that every honourable member who asked multiple questions would have had at least one of the questions at least half answered, and hopefully a little bit more than half answered. So thank you very much for the opportunity. And I do look forward to the next engagement with the committee, and thank you for the warm comments that committee members have shared about the department and the ministry. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. That is fine, because everyone was smiling. It means that they are satisfied. Just one thing before we adjourn, or before Minister keeps his party short, because like they say in Afrikaans, the minister and the acting DG refrain from work top. Don't worry with the DOP system. With the introduction, because the honourable member felt that you just said EDD. So just wants to know, what are you doing in EDD? What is your title? We know now this is the minister. We know this is the acting DG. Let's start from you, Val. Human resource manager.
I'm Zwelin Jani. Zwelin Mumeka. I'm the CFO of the department.
That's the man with the money. Okay.
I'm Hapanini Kukuboro. I'm Economic Development.
I'm Ndogozo Vilakazi. I'm in the office of the DG.
Okay, wonderful. Honorable Miami, that's fine?
Yeah, no, it's fine.
Okay, wonderful. Wonderful. So, Minister, let me, on behalf of the committee, thank you and the DG and the staff, CFO and the rest of the staff of the department for the wonderful engagement that we have. I think that it is one thing as a committee where we are, maybe because we are focusing on three key departments, and, in the NCOP we are clustered. It is economic development, it is energy, and mineral resources. Now, all three of these departments are interlinked. Economic development are interlinked with energy and are interlinked with mineral resources. And I think at one stage, as I've earlier said, we will have a full chance to do the strat plans, the forward going and the way ahead strat plans of these three departments. I think we will then have much more time for a broader engagement and a broader interaction in that regard. But in the meantime, our debate is on the 17th of May, and members, the minister has gotten, and the acting DG has gotten open door policy. If there's any questions for clarity or anything that you would like to need, please contact him. Don't be shy, don't be afraid to contact them. Please, please contact them. Feel free to do that. Minister, over to you for final words.
Really just a word of thanks to the members of the committee, and looking forward to the budget debate. And we're looking at, for anyone who's into diary planning, we're looking at the possibility of a after-debate activity that evening. We would be able to communicate via the office of the chairperson shortly, which would be an opportunity for some snacks, but also for some policy engagement through a policy platform. If we can get the people as speakers that we want to, we will let the chair know. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister, Department, and members. Members, just before we go, the Department, excuse Minister, I know you've got other engagements also. Thank you very much once again, all the best. And we will see each other very shortly. Okay, thanks. Acting DG, Ashukra. Members, next week, the 15th, we've got a request from Trade and International Relations to shift our meeting to Wednesday and to bring their meeting forward. But we will let you know in due course as soon as the chairperson, Ubaba Kamere, links up with DTI, as Minister Rob Davies wants to do the presentation on the cooperative bill himself to the committee. So we will await Honourable Kamere's response, Sister Grace, and then you and what is this young man's name? Supeka. Must just engage with one another on that. The speakers for the debate, we will engage with the ANC component tomorrow. And obviously the DA will have their own speakers there. But let me not keep you. I know you are hungry, as I can get the look from Honourable Mguni, that he's starving. This meeting stands adjourned. Honourable Kamere.
Yeah, there is that invitation tomorrow. I think in the strategic plan we talked about embassies and so on.
Mm.
So there is that workshop to talk about how we're going to do oversight on embassies. And tomorrow, I hope members got messages. Yeah.
Okay. There's also the Africa, I don't know if members have received that invitation from the Department of Energy to the Africa EU, the Africa Energy Summit that's taking place at Cape Sun Hotel. You might just follow that up with Harry. I only received it this morning.
When?
It's starting tomorrow, the 9th. And I've only received it this morning, so I want to take it up with the with the DG of energy. Honourable Abrams? I think it's from Portage, leaving at 8:30? At 9. Sorry? Healthy for members to walk. Yeah. Look, we know that you are walking in Kumasi. This is an urban area. Everything is fine. Members, with that, is there no other burning issues or issues that you felt that you can live without or you can't live without? No one? This meeting stands adjourned. Thank you very much.